Hello, I'm Marla. I am a compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hi, Marla.
I have a ton of stuff here. I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. I didn't have very long to prepare, so we'll just see what happens. I gave my story like 7-8 months ago, I think, at one of the Sunday OA meetings, and cannot anywhere find my notes or my pictures. So first I was frustrated, then I thought, well, okay, maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe that was like old baggage processed. I'm a verbal processor, so got done with it, and maybe it's like that's done and over with, and now time to move on to the next layer. So that's how I see that. Or maybe I'm just really unorganized, and it reminds me of still the unmanageable life. I don't know. Also a benefit of me doing this today and looking for my notes that I did not find. I found several old journals, notes, God letters, things like that. I also found a manila folder, and I'm talking a full manila folder of diets, weight loss tricks, all the jizz-jazz from before. I had a filing cabinet. It was towards the back. Didn't really know it was there. So I, without even peeking into it, really, threw it away. Just done and over with. So that in itself to me reminds me, yep, I got some more recovery than I did before, because that would have been like, ooh, Christmas, what's this, before. Let's see here. Most of you have already heard kind of bits and pieces of my story in meetings before, because I talk a lot, I'm a verbal processor, so thanks for letting me blab extensively at meetings. And I apologize, I had time for kind of jumping around in my story. But you get what you get, right? So I was going to start this with, I was born a poor black boy, which is the quote from Steve Martin, the jerk. But, actually, I usually clarify, first of all, bulimic. A lot of people assume that's vomiting. I don't know why I have the need to explain this, but I do. So, my mode of, first of all, when I came into program, it took me several months and at least one, if not two sponsors, to help me see that I am a bulimic, even though my way of purging is different than what a lot of other people's is. My body doesn't throw up easily. And let me tell you, I tried really good. But I found other ways to still purge my body, mostly through exercise or diet pills, or I started getting into the laxatives. Really any way I could. So that's my preface. I'm 36. I'm the youngest of four kids. I come from I was raised rural Iowa, went to the same, or this town I'm from, there's only one high school, went to the same school my entire life, never moved anything until I went to college. In my household, there was no sexual abuse, there was no blatant physical abuse, there was no obvious addictions, from my parents anyway. This made it really hard for me to kind of connect the dots, because I didn't understand why I was the way I was. It was hard for me to even see what I did, let alone, because you'll see some of my behaviors are kind of like gray area. They don't look like other people's that are in the program. So I've had times where it was really hard for me to understand what's going on here, and furthermore, is it a problem? Yes, it's a problem. And where did this come from? Kind of realized after a while that it doesn't really matter where or why. It just, it is what it is. Figure it out, address it, move on. I wanted to analyze and break everything down. Back to like my family and so forth. My dad was a farmer in the 80s when the bankruptcies and the farmers all went belly up. I was probably about age 8. I can remember my mom saying several times, we're out of food or we're out of propane, which propane would be the heat for us, and there's no money. And knowing that there wasn't going to be money for a length of time. And so I'm sure that caused a lot of fear for me at a very young age. Both of my parents were raised by alcoholics, but their fathers were both alcoholics. One active, one not active while he was being raised, my dad was being raised. And then the moms were both very much the sober, hard-hitting, caretaker, Al-Anon type people. My parents divorced. I was the last kid. They divorced after I was 18 and after I went to college. So it was obvious that they were waiting. My mom was waiting to get the kids through. That was her. And I appreciate that. I'm quite sure there was a lot of crap that went on that I would not have experienced if that wouldn't have been the situation. But not liking change and so forth, I still am appreciative of that. As a kid, oh, and back to the, back to us as kids, 3 out of 4 of us kids are addicts. So, based on that, there's obviously something screwy going on at home. Or the DNA, whatever. I was never extremely overweight as a kid. I was always just on the heavier side. However, I always felt like I was the fat kid. I always felt like I was whatever. I know for sure at least a 4th grade picture, and I'm pretty sure before maybe 2nd or 3rd grade, that I distinctly remember hating that picture because I thought I looked fat. Now I look back at it, and I felt fat. I remember the day it was taken, and I felt fat. And I felt like a dork. So my mom made me pull my stupid pants up too high. and I had a really ridiculous haircut. My point is that I was told by a sponsor later on that I have anorexic eyes, so to speak, which probably a better way to say that would be is anorexic thinking. I never was anorexic, but some of my behaviors were. I definitely viewed myself in the way an anorexic would. And the thinking and the negative thought process, I think, was very much that way. When I was younger, I was a mama's girl. I was very close to my mom. Really was not connected at all and did not feel close to my dad. I just really didn't care about him. I mean, I did, but I didn't. But once they split up, my parents, once they split up, that all changed. That was a shift. My dad was, you know, he'd always had someone take care of him. And me being very broken, I stepped right in and was going to, you know, take care of him and whatever. And my mom became very angry and bitter about, I don't know, lots of things, the divorce and whatever. And I'm pretty sure was in a depression. She and I grew apart, and I got resentful of that, just whatever. She became a parent when she was, 19 years old. She was a kid herself. She had 4 kids, and my dad was not responsible. So she didn't learn her coping skills either. She didn't learn how to do things. But anyway, I always was, the good kid as far as following rules, got good grades. It was very important for me what people thought of me. I didn't want to upset my parents. I didn't want to upset anybody. I was kind of actually shy, which will make you laugh if you know me now. In school, in my family, you played sports. That's what you did. You played sports. And I had actually very little natural ability, I think. But in my family, that's what you did, so I did it. I'm actually now grateful for that because that taught me, first of all, it kind of pulled me out of my shell a little bit. Secondly, looking back, it allowed me to at least feel a part of something, a part of the team, at least even if it was forced. And thirdly, now I at least have kind of a hobby. I have a common ground with other people, which has given me confidence to now be able to go and join a group or play on a team where I might not know anybody else. It's not comfortable to do that, but I'm able to do that, which I'm forever grateful for. 9th grade. There is a, and again, this may be me jumping around, but deal with it. 9th grade, there's a picture of me and my volleyball team. And I distinctly remember the girl I was standing beside. I was always just terribly envious of her. She was beautiful anyway, but she, I thought, had the perfect body. She was the perfect weight, and I thought she had no struggles and whatever. Well, ironically, come to find out now she's an anorexic, so go figure, but I was very jealous of her. Now, when I see that picture now, we're almost identical in size and shape. And yet the other girl that's sitting beside me was, she was like the water girl, so to speak, the helper. She was very obese. This girl was very obese. And I remember thinking I felt more like her. My first dieting, sixth grade I think it was, I begged my mom to get Slim Fast for me. And I justified it that, you know, it was going to be my breakfast and da-da-da-da. First of all, that was alert behavior because I saw her drinking it. And, of course, the media, the TV, and so forth. I begged her. She didn't want to buy it. But ultimately, she did. So, eighth grade. Oh, and also, I always saw her on the yo-yo diets. I saw her weight go up and down, up and down. A lot of behaviors there. In eighth grade, started skipping meals here and there for the purpose of losing weight and dieting. And in eighth grade, I did lose, I don't know how much, but a decent amount. For that age and weight, for a significant amount, I would say maybe 10, 12 pounds. So, you know, when you're eighth grade, that's a decent amount. Ninth grade. I actually was able to go to prom as a ninth grader, and so my diet at that point, saltine crackers and water for breakfast and for lunch. Then I would, after school, go and I had track practice, so I'm running a lot. And then I'd go home and eat dinner, which I was starving, but I remember thinking, how am I going to avoid dinner without my parents, whatever. And I don't think I avoided dinner. I think I typically ate it, but I know I had the thought process of, at least once I probably said, oh, I'm just too tired to eat, which was a lie. I was hungry. High school, I had a boyfriend who was very much into weightlifting and nutrition. Now looking back, now that I understand the way we think, he was obviously a broken person too. He was trying to use other things to fill him. But because of his influence, and I will also preface this by saying that I used to blame him and think that he kind of started or caused the eating disorder. Now I understand that he just poured fuel on the fire that was already brewing. It might have sped it up or added to it, but it was already in the works. Because of him and his fitness and his whatever, we would, he was actually verbally abusive about my body and about what I would eat. He would try to, you know, tell me this and tell me that and whatever and control it. And at this point, I am about 137 pounds. I think that's how much I weighed when I graduated as a senior. Just to give you perspective, that's, I think, identical to what I weigh now. And I would say, guessing, I'm assuming, like, you know, body and fat composition, I'm probably pretty much the same. There were several years where I was just scared of certain foods, terrified. And so there were several years that I didn't eat a hamburger or french fries, things like that, because my head would tell me that I ate one of those, and then boom, I'd wake up the next day and be 10 pounds heavier, which is ridiculous, but that's what I thought. College was the first time that I tried to actually throw up. Like I said before, my body does not easily do that. So I decided, okay, I'm going to make this happen. First of all, because my best friend at the time, who was also my binge buddy, was secretly doing this also. She didn't know I was doing it. But it pissed me off that we'd go and just binge, and then she'd go and be able to get rid of hers, and I was stuck with mine. It pissed me off. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to get on this train. So I decided I was going to use a pencil, stick down my throat, try to throw up that way. Don't bother, it doesn't work. It's a little painful. You can see how I'm getting motivated here, and I'm only at 21 years old-ish. Her and I, we would over-exercise. We would lay out to get a suntan on a tin roof at noon without sunblock. Good idea. We would drink a lot of beer. We'd be very promiscuous. And then we'd shop for clothes. We'd spend hours shopping for clothes. On sale, by the way. You know, like dirt cheap clearance sale because we're college because we don't have any money. But we'd buy them in a size too small as our motivation. So I used to have a lot of sizes, all of which didn't get worn. Then we'd do the same thing the next day. We'd go in cycles, whether we were binging or whether we were starving. School was not easy for me at all. I always got A's and B's, always. I'm that strange perfectionist piece where I have to do it the best, and yet it never, ever looks like that. So I kind of feel funny calling it a perfectionist. But school was not easy for me. And now looking back, I think, well, maybe that's because I was always either eating while I was, you know, I was like, have my books in front of me and be eating in bed while I'm trying to study for a test, or I was calculating how many calories I'd eaten, or I was obsessing about when am I going to go to the gym because I have no energy because I just binged, but I've got to get rid of this, but I've got to study, but blah, 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 blah. Craziness cycles. But on the other hand, you know how we eat in order to, like, lower our anxiety. When you're in school, you got a test coming up next day, you got a paper due, you got a whatever. First of all, I was number one procrastinator when I was in my disease. And what kills that anxiety was the food. So it was that, it's just spiraled. I now see that I was very lonely when I was in school, college. My parents, as I said, were both stuck in their own crap. They were not acting like parents. I'm not sure if they had never listened to this. I'm not sure if they ever really did act like parents, but again, I know they did the best they could. They didn't know it any better. My first sister at the time, who I was probably closest with at the time and most similar to at the time, lived out of state. My second sister was, at that time in her life, still actively an alcoholic and a bulimic. This actually did not affect me because we just didn't have a relationship. I truly can say I just didn't know my second sister. Just didn't affect me. Other than it probably affected the fact that my parents were, I would assume, focused on her and her behaviors and probably kind of just forgot about me. My brother at the time, my brother is an addict, and at the time was, I don't know if he's acting or not right now, but at the time I remember being worried about him. Again, I was a caretaker for my dad. I took on all the responsibilities for any kind of family thing, specifically Christmas. I can remember being up at 2 a.m. decorating the Christmas tree, being stupidly exhausted and not being able to stop. First of all, because I have a little teeny twinge of OCD, and I can't stop until it's done, and it's perfect. And secondly, I'm the caretaker. I got to get this done. This is how Christmas is supposed to be, and I can't be any other way. And then, of course, being resentful for it. My grandparents I was very, very close to them. I never in my life went to a babysitter. I always went to grandma's house. At this point in time, which is about in, you know, like 97-ish and so forth before that. My grandma and grandpa, their health is starting to decline a little bit. My grandma, as I said, was the closest relative to me. She was also my food pusher. She was also, and taught me very well to be queen of denial. I learned the denial piece from my dad and my grandma both. She was, though, an amazing support. She had always unconditional love for me. But ironically, not until I was almost 30 years old did I hear her say, I love you. Yeah. And so again, and I never questioned that she loved me. Never questioned that she loved me. And I never told her that I loved her. But again, that kind of goes to show something's not quite right in the family. And the only reason she told me that then was, she was diagnosed for the second time with cancer. And that was her way of saying that this is it. In 97, the winter of 97, I was at my heaviest weight. I was about 160. I remember one day I weighed at 162. And that was, of course, the whole, like, all right, as soon as the holidays are over, this is it. We got to get back to, you know, we got to get that, you know, New Year's resolution. We got to cut this. But while the holidays are here, we're gonna throw down. Right at that time, I had just graduated from college. I had very little income, so I'm sure I was buying, you know, like the ramen noodles and rice type food. I had zero coping skills. And at Christmas Eve, I broke my arm. So that threw a wrench in the whole, like, compulsive exercise, which normally would have followed a binge in the holidays. And winter, I get depressed in the winter, so that was a bad deal. In 99, I moved back to my hometown. For about a little over a year to help my dad in his business at the time, which ironically, because my dad is very good at denial, the business ended up back at the bank with nothing to show for it. But in that time frame, in my hometown, I met a boyfriend. I dated him for about 9 months. He was previously an addict. At the time, previously an addict. Now I understand that, you know, once an addict, always an addict. Of course, me being the very good, not yet attending Al-Anon, swooped up on that and was going to, you know, take care of him and all that stuff. When we broke up, I was obviously heartbroken and already very damaged, and then kind of just spiraled that. So that did catapult me into getting into Al-Anon, thank goodness. Shortly after Al-Anon, I ended up moving to Omaha, and I continued Al-Anon. Ironically, my sponsor at that point in Al-Anon was a previous exercise addict. So when they talk about, you know, throw 100 people into a room and the two addicts can find each other, I don't know how it works. I didn't know this at the time when I asked to remember my sponsor. I didn't know that for like a year afterwards, but I'm like, wow. So, with her, I did the fourth and fifth step. At that point in time, I don't know what it was, if it was just timing or if it was seeing all the character defects or feeling out of control. I don't know what it was, but the food and the exercise and the diet stuff just went whack. And I knew about OA and about eating disorders, partly because of my sister, who had at that point then been to two eating disorder treatment facilities inpatient. She was then at that point sober for a few years. And then I also knew about it because I was a psych major in college, go figure. This, I do believe, kept me probably from hitting a lower rock bottom, so that I'm very, very grateful for. But again, because of that, some of my behaviors were still a little bit gray area, so again, they were kind of hard to, like, pinpoint, yep, definite, you know, addiction or definite overeating or overexercising or whatever, because I was kind of in the middle. My first OA meeting that I came to, a woman who's still in the program, said to me, I finally learned I don't eat the first brownie, so I don't have to finish the whole pan. And I thought, exactly, this lady gets it. Instead of people saying, well, just have one, just stop. Oh, dear, okay. Never thought of that. I kept coming back. At the time I came into a program, I weighed about 130 pounds. And so it wasn't a matter of being overweight. It was I was at my lowest as an adult, you know, after school. And the reason I came in, I was just exhausted with the constant battle with the food, the constant battle with the weight and the scale, I was just exhausted with the calorie counting and the just daily life. I was just freaking exhausted with trying to figure out how do you live life. I was just beside myself. When I came into program, I'd go to like 5 meetings a week sometimes. It was just because I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't trust myself at home with food. I felt lonely, very, very lonely, because I wasn't in Omaha that long, so I didn't have a lot of friends yet. And my family was, you know, I was resentful of my mom for one thing. I was resentful of my dad for another, which you'll get to here. You know, siblings were everywhere off the charts. I didn't have a good relationship with my cousin, who previously we, you know, were raised together. We were very close at the time. Just stuff. So it was just an hour that I felt safe. I was very empty, and I kind of see it now as like I was like a sponge. Like I soaked up every single bit of like serenity and love and support and hope, because I didn't have a lot of hope unless I was here. I just like soaked it up like a sponge. So when I say I went to 5 meetings a week, it's not like, oh, good for you. It was like, I don't know what else to do. I'm just lost. I'm a lost puppy. And I couldn't sit still at meetings. People will tell me now how different I am, which is makes me laugh. I'm kind of embarrassed, kind of thankful, kind of appreciative that people like put up with me being a nutcase. In 2002, I had a car wreck. It wasn't a major car wreck, but I injured my neck, which kept me, threw me even more into the depression, kept me from being able to do my compulsive exercising. I started getting calls from credit collectors, which ironically was not because of my spending at all, because I was, you remember, I was very responsible. I had always perfect credit up until this point, which backing up when I was at my dad's business, he's not very responsible with money, so to speak. I, after much manipulation on his part, did not want to, was a co-signer on several credit cards for the business. So we're talking $30,000 or $40,000 in charges in my name that I did not, that those are not like me going and shopping. So resentment, big, fat, huge, all over the place resentment. At the time where I have absolutely no coping skills, I'm depressed, I'm hurt, I'm frustrated, I'm lonely, don't know, whatever, don't know how to take care of myself. At this point, ironically, I am working for an agency that is working with at-risk kids, trying to keep them out of the legal system, trying to keep them away from drugs, trying to keep them, you know, out of gangs, all that stuff. So what do? At this point, I'm very broken, so I start dating a pothead for a while. And, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, so... I'm, you know, one Sunday afternoon, I decide, well, they're going to be getting high, so I guess I'll get high, too. And then I'm like, well, I'm stuck an hour away from my house. I can't get home because I'm high. What do I do now? Okay, well, I guess, you know, whatever. So that was not a good idea. At that point in time at work, ironically, I'm on probation because I'm either calling in sick because I'm just actually sick, mostly all depressed, potentially hungover, don't feel like whatever, or most likely the situation is I've been working out, didn't go to bed till like 3 in the morning because I went to the gym at midnight, literally, or 1. Or I know that I have to work out that day before I can go to work and start my day because I'm so crazy I can't get my head to shut off instead otherwise. So those are all reasons I'm calling in sick. When I am there, I'm constantly calculating like how much calories I've eaten or what I'm not going to eat and obsessing, so I'm not really doing my job then anyway. Or I'm milking the time clock trying to figure out how I can, you know, get the self-centered, just flat being very self-centered. So I'm on probation, very close to losing my job. I'm at this point, I'm in therapy, I'm on antidepressants. I actually did do 3 or so weeks as a partial inpatient at a eating disorder facility. I can remember the psych doctor at that time asking me if I was suicidal. And I remember saying, no, I just don't give a shit if I live or die. And I genuinely just didn't give a shit. It did not matter to me. It didn't occur to me to actually off myself. I just didn't care. And I lived my life that way. I was promiscuous. I drove my car 110 miles an hour. I drank a lot, drove home, hung with people that may or may not have known. Didn't matter. For the first time, I remember this day, I was in my kitchen and I saw the knife rack. And before that, I've never been a cutter, I've never been a, you know, self-harmer in that manner. But for the first time ever, I saw the knives and it made sense to me. It actually occurred to me that I could cut as part of a relief. And for the first time it made sense to me why people did that. That scared me. And that's when I knew I was in trouble. Luckily, I didn't do it. I'm too vain for scars. Yeah, but whatever, take it, right? August of 2002, I started dating Chris, who became my fiancé later on. He's a decent, I mean, he meant well, but dysfunctional with capital D. His mom was an alcoholic. His dad cheated. He had a grandma who had five husbands. He was later diagnosed as bipolar. And, of course, I denied this because I'm perfect at denial, but now looking back it makes sense. He was put on an antidepressant that if you drink while you're on this antidepressant has a reverse effect. It will actually make you, it can make you angry and mean, and for him made him physically violent. So there was some physical domestic abuse there. Again, denial. So what do we do instead? In 2006 we buy a house and get engaged, because that's how you fix things. At this time, roughly about this time, I also stopped going to OA after 5 years. I knew I wasn't done with LA completely, and I knew I needed to be here. There was no question with that. It was just that I wasn't ready yet to trust God, wasn't ready to change my ways or do step work. And I felt like I was wasting other people's time. I felt like I was just telling the same story over and over and over, that I need to do this, I need to do this, I should do this, I should do that. And I kind of got sick of my own story, and I thought, if I'm sick of it, I'm sure everybody else is. So I just stopped coming for a little over a year. I haven't the clue. I was obviously in a food fog, because I don't know. I have no reference of time when that was, how long it was, when I came back, what I did during that time. I have no reference at all. Thank God I came back. And thank you for always welcoming me, and nobody really questioned it. The good thing about this program is there's so many meetings that I kind of think people just assumed I was at different meetings. So, whatever. The bad thing is, as a side note, I think that when we don't see people show up, we also assume they're at different meetings, and in reality, they might have just fallen off the waysides, and so that does kind of scare me that those were people that we maybe would call and say, hey, you all right, or where you been? But it's things to think about. From 2004 to 2007, I was working for a boss who was very chaotic. She was very sick. She was a compulsive worker, a compulsive complainer. I didn't realize until I left that situation how easily I'm influenced by my environment, and also by guilt. I guess I did know that, but very strongly influenced by both of those. But this is, though, ironically, the first time I can remember that I just kind of accepted the weight I was. For the most part at that time frame, I wasn't on any crazy diets. For the most part, I wasn't taking crazy diet pills. I wasn't exercising compulsively. I don't think I had a food plan. But for the first time, I was just kind of like, you know what? I guess I'm just supposed to be this weight. And I was roughly about 150, 152 pounds. And I'm 5'4", so heavy, but, you know, in the big scheme of things, not that big a deal. June of 07, my fiance and I split up, not my choice. I was alone, felt like I had broken dreams of, you know, like a family, future family. I had a house to take care of maintenance-wise on my own, financially on my own, scared to death on that. I had to make all new friends, because the friends I had had previously, or the people that I spent the most time with, were mutual friends between the two who he was friends with first. So it was like, you know, you get the furniture and the friends, I get the house and the dog. That kind of sucks starting over in that way. Thank God I had been back to OA at that point. Because I literally, after a Sunday OA meeting, it's in a church, I went into the chapel to just say prayers. And three other OA people came in with me. Held my hand, said a prayer out loud for me, and just sat there for probably 10 minutes while I bawled at the bottom of my guts out loud, just bawled and bawled and bawled and bawled and bawled. And I'm so grateful for that. This church has a skylight at the end of the prayer that they said for me. The clouds moved, and the sunshine shined in the window so intensely that you would not even believe. And I know without a question that was my higher power telling me, you're not alone, you have these people, I'm here, I got your back, I'm taking care of everything, you're going to be okay. And I was scared shitless, and I didn't know what it was going to look like, but I knew I was going to be okay. And I'm forever grateful for just people in the program who can do that. The power of the group is huge. Right after the split up, I lost some weight just because of nerves. I was not doing anything crazy at all. In fact, ironically, my food was the cleanest and with absolutely no thought process at all. The obsession on the food, and I think the obsession on the exercise, was just totally lifted at that point for, I don't know, a couple months. It was just like amazing. But I think it was because God wanted me to really, really, really deal with what was going on instead of the escape, and really show me that I can do this. It's scary, but I can do this. About that same time, I had asked, or a little before that, I had asked my closest OA friend to be my sponsor. I did this with much, much hesitation. I had thought about this for over a year, and I thought, nope, it's not a good idea, it's not a good idea. It's kind of like doing, you know, like, business with family, that kind of how I felt. But I did. I ended up asking her to be my sponsor because I had a lot of respect for her. She knew me the most, whatever. Shortly after the breakup with my fiance, my sponsor also, what I call, broke up with me. And I, from what I know, I don't know for sure. I don't understand still. But I think, from what I can gather, the reason for her doing that was I wasn't working the program to her satisfaction. I don't know. I don't know. I was devastated by a friend again, feeling like I was betrayed by a friend after the split up. But I did hang in there. I do know that shortly after that happened, she left the program for almost 3 years. So I can assume that there was some of that on her side of the street going on. For the first time in my life, in 07, the fall of 07, I started dating a guy who, as far as I know, had no addiction, no chemical imbalance, no mental health diagnosis, no crazy lifestyle, like just healthy guy. He had a good family background. He was responsible with his money. This was a turning point for me. Like, this was like, oh, finally I can be around healthy people. Like, I must have upgraded a little bit because, you know, you attract what you are, right? We, again, split up after about a year and 3 months, not to my choice again. But, and again, I also had to make all new friends because the people we spent the most time with were his group of friends, so had to do that. Now, I will say, it's not like I don't know how to, like, make friends and stick with friends. The issue is, first of all, I live in a different town than where I graduated from, so obviously I don't have my friends there. And my friends here, most of them are married and have children, have completely different lifestyles and schedules and so forth. So it's not like I just, like, ditch my friends every time I get a boyfriend. But for the first time, decent, solid guy, just wasn't the right timing for both of us. We broke up 2 days before Christmas, coldest day of the goddamn year. I got strep throat and was very sick up until Christmas Day, and even Christmas Day I was kind of down. I got no real explanation from him why we were both breaking up, which, you know, was difficult. But for the first time in my entire life, ever, I knew I was going to be okay, no matter what. I knew that I couldn't manipulate the situation, couldn't change it, I couldn't deny it, and that sucked. And I also, like, knew too much. They talk about, you know, the program being like the mafia. Once you're in, you know too much. I knew too much that I couldn't go back to the food at that point. I couldn't like drown myself out with the food or the crazies and whatever. I had too much recovery to, like, go backwards. But it was just like an amazing feeling to know that I was so upset and sad and pissed and resentful and scared and whatever, and yet to know that I was going to be okay. I lost a little bit of weight after that. Again, not crazies, just, I guess, God doing what God does. March of 08 is when I actually went sugar-free. When I say sugar-free, I mean recreational sugar. I don't mean where I used to spend 2 hours in the grocery store reading the salad dressing label to see what the third ingredient was, which was one of my major forms of insanity. It doesn't work for me. I know that works for some people in program. That absolutely is using behavior for me. how did I get sugar? And when I say sugar-free, what I mean is I may eat a shitload of sugar-free food, but it's sugar-free, and it keeps me from the depression, from the guilty feelings, from the crazies, from the lethargic feeling, from the spiraling down. I do kind of still play with it. I understand that I do play with it. But it's so much better than for me using sugar. The way I got sugar-free is a huge deal, I feel. Because I was a chocoholic, I did not know how I could possibly go one single day without sugar. I had no clue how I could do that. My sponsor at the time, who is just a super amazing person, she'd gotten off the sugar, she'd gotten off this, she'd gotten off that, and she was just down to her very last vice. And her doctor told her she had to get off the Diet Coke. And she was devastated. And I know she was, because, I mean, my God, you give up everything else. And you have to give that one last thing. And I knew that if she had to give it up, I knew that if she could do it for one day, I knew that I should be able to do the no sugar for one day. So we shook. I made a deal. She said 3 days. And I said, one day. Because the physical, supposedly sugar takes 3 days to get physically out of your body. And I said, I'll do it for one day and we'll see what happens. That's how this program works. And it worked. It was the next day before I looked back and went, oh my God, I didn't have sugar yesterday. And I was just dumbfounded how I did it, because I didn't even think about it. And so not me, God, only God. So of course I did it the next day, and I did it the next day. And so I've been 2.5 years of, for the most part, recreational free sugar, whatever, you know. I've had about 10 to 12 days in there where I've had something that was sugar. But out of, what, 1,000 plus days, amazing to me. I don't take that for granted, because I know, well, what I was backing up. I've been, after I've done sugar, I've always, to this point, been able to get back on track the next day, or usually even the next meal, and not get back in, and not be thrown into a full relapse. And for that, I'm forever grateful. Up to this point, I've worked steps 8 and 9. I'm now back to that out of sight, out of mind, kind of not really working on it. Know that I'm going to need to. My life is, though, truly filled with fun activities, a lot of good, solid friends. At this point, I'm dating a guy that I believe, at this point, is a good, healthy person for the most part. I've learned to stay out of my parents' lives and to cut the conversation when they try to guilt or manipulate me. I've learned to let go of my brother and his addiction. This, though, is now a struggle with, for me, when it involves his 3 children, which are my nieces. I can now let him go and say, figure it out, doesn't reflect me, I'm not you, you're not me. But when it comes to his kids, I do have a little fear there. I do dabble in control because of the fear, because I worry about them and I love them. But I do have to trust that God has a plan for them and a path for them. Just like he does for me. I can't change their path, just like I can't change my path. All I can do is follow it. I have a job and a boss now that I love. Therefore, I am healthier. I also work harder. I work harder because I'm healthier. I'm healthier because I work harder. I'm rewarded for it because of all of those. Because of these things, he allows me to take time off when I need it. He allows me to come in later than what I probably should. He allows me to take longer lunch hours to just get like my daily life in order, because I have crazy. But because of that, I feel obligated and dedicated to do a good job and to stay later and to do and to build his business for him. I am allowed to kind of do things that fill my bucket, so to speak, which allows me to then do a better job at work. Because of my healthier body weight, even though we're really only talking a difference of 20 pounds, if that, because of my healthier body weight and my healthier thinking, more so my healthier thinking, and my healthier self-talk, I now have confidence to do things I would never ever dreamed I would ever do or have before. For instance, I made a list. I have a motorcycle. A couple weeks ago, I went on a floating raft trip down the Niobrara River in a swimsuit all day with 15 people, half of which I don't know hardly at all. The other half I know just marginally. This was a 2-day outdoor camping trip, which meant I didn't have control of my food. Recovery. I play softball and volleyball both. Once a week during, at a minimum during the summer. I started both of these with only knowing one other person on the team, because again, I had to find new friends twice. Actually, 3 times, because when I moved to Omaha, I didn't know anybody. I'm now, because of my healthier thinking and weight and just self-talk, I'm now a better athlete, because I can now focus more on the game and what I'm doing and less on, you know, like the what do my thighs look like, or what did they just say about the fat girl who just missed that ball? I'm a little bit faster runner, which always makes you feel a little bit better when you're not the slowest. I got a trip paid for by my boss to Myrtle Beach, which means, again, a lot of time in swimsuits, a lot of time with food that's not of my choosing, out of control. I can now go dance without spending 2 hours in the gym that day. I can eat a burger or pizza and not hate myself. I can see the scales that might show 2 or 3 pounds increase and know that it might just be water weight. It might just be that, you know what, some days you're heavier than others. Go to the bathroom. I don't have to weigh myself every single day anymore. The days I do weigh myself, I get on once. It's that number. I get off. I don't have to do the 3-time ritual. I can take days off work without the risk of spending the entire day either eating or sleeping or feeling the guilt of both of those. I now can know that my brother has been arrested and facing prison time, and I don't need to binge over it. I don't need to control it. I'm a little worried about it, but the worry's not going to get me anywhere. I can say prayers and just be of service somewhere else. I can now, because of recovery, set boundaries with my dad and say, no, I'm not going to go to dinner with you at 9:30 at night on a second's notice, no matter how much you are going to try to manipulate me into doing so. I can listen to my mom play the victim or bash other people and just let her talk without trying to argue with her, or also without trying to fix and justify the problem. I can have a meal or a whole day where I don't feel good about what I ate. Maybe a sugar day, maybe a big time overeat, small scale binge day, and still get, still not throw in the towel and just get back on track that next meal. Because I have a meal, a food plan now, and oh well, that was past. What's the next meal? Might take it smaller on that next meal, but I still stick to it. I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater anymore, is what I'm trying to say. I now, these days, can tell a friend I love you. Still not easy, but I can do it. I can now commit to helping someone or spending time with them, even when I'd rather be at the gym or be napping. I forgot to kind of share my napping was my isolation. I would shut down when I couldn't deal with life. I spent a lot of time under the covers just trying to just make the world go away, which was the reason I would call in sick most of the time. I can choose to, nowadays, view mowing my yard as an opportunity to connect with nature and to get sunshine instead of being bitter about this task that I'm stuck with because I'm stuck with this house because of this, because of that, because of da-da-da. And to be thinking that poor me, nobody helps me, and I got to do all this myself, and I got to take care of myself. That whole taking care of, I can now date somebody without feeling like they're the one that's supposed to take care of me and take care of my house and pay my bills and fix all my problems and make me feel better when I have a bad day and all that stuff. I can now recognize that I don't. That's not their job. That's my job, and that's why I have a program and a higher power. And tools. I can now say out loud, I'm sad. I need a hug. I'm sorry. I feel crabby. Mm-hmm. Simple. Sometimes you just say it out loud. That's just it. Some days you just are. Non-addicts are too. I can now put on an outfit once, leave it on, walk out the door. Used to be every day just going to work would be a pile of clothes on my bed of I feel fat in this, I don't like that, I don't know if I should wear this because I'm self-conscious, blah, blah, blah. I can also go to a store. If I try something on and it doesn't fit, I can just say, you know what, it just doesn't fit my body style. It's just not the right one for me. Instead of, oh my God, I'm a fat ass and this doesn't fit and I'm a big loser because everybody else wears this. Not everybody else wears this. There's different sizes and different styles and different brands that fit other people. It doesn't always have to fit me. I now have a food plan that I can, for the most part, stick to. And yet, on the other hand, I don't have to be rigidly stupid about it and my life every single day looks different, so sometimes my food has to adjust and ebb and flow. And for the most part, I can come to terms with that. That, hopefully, I don't know if that was my story, my life in a nutshell or not, big huge nutshell, but I am very grateful for being able to do this, because I know this is what I need to do to kind of help me see where I've come. It allowed me, or forced me, one or the other, to sit still for 2.5 hours in the sunshine today. Never a bad thing. And I am just grateful for this program, and grateful for all of you. And I always get something. I told somebody today, I've never once been to a meeting that was a bad meeting that I didn't get something out of. And I hope that I'll be smart enough to know that I always need this program and to always come back. So thanks for letting me share.
Oh, thank you.
Do we shut this up?
You guys wanted a question?
Oh.
Any questions?
Sure.
We'll now open the meeting to questions to the speaker. Limit your questions to the speaker's share and how he or she works the steps or uses the tools of recovery. We ask that you raise your hand and wait to ask your question when the speaker calls on you.
I have a question. My compulsive over here.
Hey,
do you have a favorite tool and you want to tell us which one it is?
I would say I most definitely, most consistently, I was going to say use meetings, just because that's obviously measurable. It's pretty clear cut if I'm in a meeting or not. And those are, because my second one, when I'm rebutting or trying to decide which one's my favorite, would need to be the food plan as well. I think probably food plan, but let me explain meetings first, because with my go, busy, not so good at planning ahead and scheduling, and not so good at times, meetings are kind of like, I have to be there a certain time, and I'm going to be there for the full hour, or you know, maybe I get there 5 minutes, 10 minutes late. But it allows me to connect with people. It allows me to process out loud, because that's the best way I process. It's because sometimes I don't connect with how I'm feeling. Sometimes I don't slow down. I just never really learned to check in with myself and say, am I sad today? Am I scared today? Am I whatever today? But when I'm at a meeting and people give me a hug and they say, how are you? I used to say, I'm fine, how are you? And I've tried really, really hard to stop myself and say to myself, and I've actually said this out loud to people sometimes, how am I? Let me think. And try to give an honest answer, because I truly don't know how I feel a lot of times, which that's that part. Also, because if I'm going to try to say, if I've told myself I'm going to make some phone calls today, or if I'm going to meet with my sponsor, if I'm going to do some journaling, 9 times out of 10, somehow my chaotic lifestyle still gets in the way and I don't get those things done. Whereas the meeting starts at 7:30, I'm going to be there somewhere around 7:30. I'm going to be there. Whereas if I'm journaling, I can put that off for 3-4 hours and then, oops, didn't have time. The food plan is, I would say, by far what's probably helped me. It's also the one that I rejected the most. Very resistant. Very, whatever you want to call it about the whole food plan thing. Was just not going to do it because I was scared. I just didn't think I could. And also because I had, like, unrealistic thoughts of what I thought a food plan was be. I thought that meant you had to, like, commit it the night before to a sponsor. I thought it meant it had to, like, always be 3 meals, nothing in between, on a nice plate with all the veggies and fancy, and, like, blah. No, that shows you how twisted my thinking was. My food plan now is, it's a lot of food. I don't have, like, specific quantities that I eat. I don't have specific foods that I eat every time. I know certain things that work for me for breakfast. But in general, my food plan is 3 meals, never skipping a meal. Old behavior. skipping meal, even if I've had a binge earlier that day, almost always I will make sure I still have that meal, that next meal, even though I'm not hungry, because it throws me into old behavior if I don't. So three meals and up to three snacks. Almost never do I need three snacks unless they're like real small, because my snacks are big, heavy snacks. Partly because I've learned it's important for me to not ever get hungry, which I know, again, is the vice versa for some people. Some people have to learn it's okay to be hungry. Not to say it's not okay for me to be hungry, but there's that certain level of I get too hungry, and then I do real stupid things. Secondly, because I do have a very active lifestyle. And thirdly, at this point, I'm able to pull it off, and I fear the day that catches up with me, the whole like metabolism, age thing. And I get scared about that, but you know what? It is what it is for right now. I can't control it, so. That was a really long answer to one question. There you go.
Told me what I wanted to know.
Good.
Judy, I'm
Hi, Judy.
I really don't have a question, but I just wanted to thank you so much for your honesty and your sharing, because I learned things tonight about myself that I found 50% of what you said I could identify with and parallel to my own life, so thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Hi, Ron. I'm a compulsive reader.
Hi, Ron.
I thought it was so interesting that you hit on so many of the steps along the way on your journey without even saying, well, that's the ninth step or the tenth step. You hit on a lot of those. And that sort of said to me, when I think of the things that I do or don't do, that I need to overtly think about these things. You were going along doing these things. I know you gave a lot of thought to them, but you actually, you know, you dealt with family. You dealt with people that you had a hard time dealing with. And not that everything is perfect, but they're on your terms and not theirs. And I think that's just such a fantastic accomplishment. I just envy you, admire you for having done that. That's just so huge. But I really appreciate what you've said today.
Thanks. That's a big compliment because I didn't realize I was doing that. Good feedback for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Ron. People have more questions, or do you just want to go into sharing?